Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and the highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 228, The Fifth World, chapter 2, read by Mitchell 2. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, intelligence might not be conscious. The following is my recollection, as best I can remember, of my first days on the Fifth World. Keep in mind, I was, at the time, struggling with the shock of integration and recovering from injuries sustained in an unexpectedly catastrophic descent. I am only now recording this, months or possibly years after the events. Unfortunately, I cannot tell which. As soon as I was able to struggle up without fainting, I was locked in a small, dirty room which smelt like it hadn't been cleaned since it was first pressed into service as a makeshift cell. A single light suspended on frayed wires from the ceiling flickered when I reached out with my mind to touch it. Like everything else on this remote world, it was not receptive to interaction. Its purpose was limited to its function. The light, without knowing why, simply cast a sickly illumination on the unfortunate occupants of the room, and made me wonder how many past prisoners had sat here, staring at it. There were no windows, so I could not tell how long I had been there. I was drifting amongst the stars, reaching out but failing to be acknowledged, when noises in the hall outside brought me back to the physical realm. Someone fiddled with the lock and cursed before the door burst open. Bright light spilling into the cell from beyond forced me to squint and shield my eyes. "You're sure, Colrin?" the medic asked. "I could still send it to the auction to cover the costs."
"No, I'll take it," Colrin grunted. "Just put the beacon on."
"There's no need," I began to explain, but the medic pushed me back against the wall and snapped a metal ring around one of my ankles. Then roughly manhandled me to my feet and pushed me through the door. A tall rodentian with dark fur and vacant chestnut eyes stood in the hall, examining me.
"Do you have a name?" it asked.
A name. I struggled with the concept. It was foreign to my experience. In the great void, there was no need for a name. Our thoughts intermingled. We were one, and everything possible at the same time. Would having one prevent my return to the whole? I'm... The medic nodded. "It's lost its memory. There's no guarantee it will ever come back. But you'll need a name for the work bond registry, Colrin."
"Okay. I'll call it X-Kalo." "Come on, X-Kalo. We need to get back to the estate. The Krava won't pick itself."
I was led outside into a sweltering midday and choked when I tried to take in a breath of air. It was rank with chemicals and particulate matter. I suppose I should have been prepared for that. Ship and I had noted the clouds of industrial effluent from orbit. What had happened to Ship? I needed to ask Colrin about its container, but before I had a chance, the big rodentian pushed me toward a large, beat-up metallic vehicle suspended between rubber wheels. Aside from a closed-in cab at the front, the vehicle was little more than a flat surface made from some type of crude material.
"Get on the back and hold on," Colrin instructed, noticing me looking around apprehensively. "And don't think about hopping off and running. The ankle band will track you. There's nowhere you can go."
I can't, I tried to explain. My body was still foreign to me, and I wasn't confident I could get up onto the vehicle. Colrin finally understood my hesitancy and boosted me up.
"The doc said you might not have full motor control for a few more days, and hopefully they're right. I can't afford to feed the useless. Grab one of the ropes and sit with your back to the cab," he directed.
There were two ropes running down the center of the rough-hewn deck. Uncertain of my balance, I took hold of the closest one and worked my way to the cab, placing my back against it as directed. The machine growled angrily to life, bellowing a cloud of noxious black smoke out the back, belying the state of technology implied by the planet's haze of dismembered satellites. The crude vehicle suddenly jerked into motion. We bounced through narrow, rutted streets, which looked like they had been haphazardly plowed into the mud, encouraging ramshackle, half-constructed buildings to spring up like weeds along their sides. Small children, oblivious to being run over, darted out from cracks between the buildings and from hiding places behind piles of garbage to grab small morsels thrown into the tracks of the big, ponderous machines by laughing adults. Colrin and the driver behind didn't even slow when they barely missed two of the kits who managed to dart out of harm's way at the last second. After a time, the haphazardly jammed together structures gave way to large industrial plants consisting of tangled pipes and expanses of gray concrete, punctuated by thin towers belching yellowish clouds. By this time, we had turned onto a large, multi-lane thoroughfare choked with impatient vehicles of all descriptions, each piloted by a single Rodentian, jostling for position like angry bulls. The acrid air exhausted by these machines was so intense my eyes began to water. I noticed Colrin had closed the windows in the cab. At one point, we came to a complete halt as something ahead must have blocked the way forward. Colrin used the size of his flatbed to bully several smaller vehicles into giving way. To the vocal consternation of their drivers, he turned off onto a smaller avenue. We traveled for an indeterminate time through anonymous low buildings hemmed in by fields of immobile vehicles. Signs, probably describing the function of these structures, competed for attention in a language I had yet to learn, so to me, their meaning was opaque. I reached out with my mind to search for others who might be able to help, only to find unintentional babbling at the very edge of my perception. The incoherent noise made the silent intelligence of the universe seem impossibly distant, and my heart sank. The ponderous vehicle took a sudden turn, which left me sprawled on the flatbed, grasping for a second handhold. It bounced over some obstacles, then came to a jolting stop beside one of the nameless buildings. Colrin jumped out of the cab, then motioned for me to get down. Still unsteady, I dropped off the back, stumbled, and had barely regained my balance when a deep sound started growling somewhere around the corner of the structure. It grew louder, and the ground began to vibrate as a large machine on treads carrying two metal tanks approached. A small Rodentian, with fur similar to mine, was precariously perched on the side.
"This is all they have," it yelled to Colrin, who was obviously not happy. "Nothing is getting through. It's the washouts from the rain," the machine's operator added apologetically. "The roads are still closed."
"And yet, they're not easing up on my contract deliverables, are they?"
Colrin complained, then motioned for the machine's operator to continue. Once the tanks had been dropped onto the flatbed, the small Rodentian who had been riding along began to lash them down with ropes.
"Ex-Kalo, get up there and help,"
Colrin yelled, then returned to the cab. With some difficulty, I managed to climb back up and did what I could to help, until my new companion seemed satisfied with our efforts. It waved to Colrin and showed me how to wedge myself in between the tanks and the back of the cab. We soon found ourselves jostled around as Colrin started the lumbering machine moving again. He swung it back out onto the road, then accelerated,
Soon, the monotonous buildings gave way to equally monotonous fields, planted in geometrically perfect rows, which disappeared into the industrial haze on both sides. Initially, we kept to ourselves, concentrating on not getting thrown off the bucking flatbed. A somewhat smoother section of road provided an opportunity to reach out to the mind of the rodentian next to me. The response was not what I had expected. It stared at me, quizzically, as if I had spoken. I tried again, and for the briefest moment could hear its thoughts, before they were lost in the general muddle of the planet's mindless incoherence.
"You're Colrin's new Agricola,"
it confirmed.
"I'm not sure what that means," I yelled over the wind and road noise. Had I been imagining it, or had I seen the glint of possibility in its round eyes?
"You're his new acquisition, a new farmhand. What's your name?"
I hesitated. "Colrin calls me Ex-Kalo."
"That means from the sky," the other explained. "But what did you call yourself before?"
"I can't remember," I admitted.
"So what he told me was true. You were hit in the head and lost your memory."
I nodded.
"I'm called Operarius. It's not my real name. It's the one Colrin used on my bill of sale because he couldn't remember mine when he bought my work bond. I'm okay with it. Simplifies things."
Operarius explained, then noticed the black band around my ankle. He pulled up a pant leg, revealing one of his own.
"See? I'm Agricola, like you."
He put his pants back down, then stared out behind the flatbed at nothing in particular. We both sat in silence as the landscape shifted from flat to gentle swells, then to rolling hills, all planted with the same crop of shoulder-high, bright green plants with yellow flowers. Behind them, the hills climbed into ridges. A few were covered with forest. Others bore large scars where the trees were being removed. As the flatbed slowed, the truck turned onto a narrow, muddy road that separated two identical fields. Operarius caught me staring at them.
This is the beginning of Colrin's land. As you can see, the Krava is almost ready to harvest, and it's a great crop for once. So it's a good thing you're here."
"Krava?" I questioned.
"Did the doc say you're okay?" "Krava, don't give me that blank stare. What do you think sweetens your food? It's in everything we eat. What planet are you from, Kalo?"
I shrugged and looked longingly up at the sky.
"Really?" Operarius laughed. "No one has been up there in years, at least not since the Great Collision. With all the debris, it's
not entirely impossible," I suggested distractedly.
"You're claiming you're from up there." "But that's just a ridiculous rumor," Operarius scoffed. "No one got stranded in the old space stations. Nothing could have survived. You might as well just have appeared from nowhere. But then again, there are people who believe in aliens, sea monsters and fairies. I wouldn't have guessed you as the type."
"I'm not from a space station," I admitted. "However, I don't really remember where I'm from. So, like you said, I may have just appeared out of thin air."
Which was the actual truth. Operarius laughed again and let it drop.
"Hey, don't worry about it. I'm sure you'll eventually remember. Sometimes I'd like to forget my past too."
The flatbed finally bounced to a halt in front of a group of low buildings arranged in a semicircle around a muddy court. An odd collection of big-wheeled machines were parked precisely in a row, as if someone had measured the distance between each. Colrin dropped down from the cab and motioned for us to do the same.
"Operarius will show you what to do," Colrin explained to me, shading his eyes so he didn't have to squint in the bright sun. "You can take any open slots in the bunkhouse. I'll be getting the sprayers ready for the west fields. Operarius, why don't you take our new helper here out to the crash site and clean up the mess so it doesn't interfere with the harvesters? I want them to get started on that field tomorrow."
we made our way to the site of my arrival in a chugging metal beast raised up so its body was suspended above the Krava on large, narrow wheels which fit between the rows. It emitted a noxious, burnt chemical smell and made me cough when it blew in my face. But the fumes didn't seem to bother Opportarius as it rolled clumsily along the muddy rows of plants until we arrived at a scar which cut across the field at an angle. The Krava plants along its edge looked withered and discolored, as if they had been singed by flames. A deep furrow plowed into the dark brown mud ended at a pile of charred debris, the remains of ship's foam metal cover. Opportarius brought the machine to a halt, then jumped down, tossing a shovel at me.
"We've got to fill in the trench that thing made so the harvesters won't get stuck. They're automated and not very smart. Something like this will confuse them."
Still not acclimated to my physical form, I struggled to toss a few shovelfuls of wet dirt back into the wounded soil, while Opportarius filled in a substantial length. He stopped to pant and cool down. It was getting unbearably hot and humid. The sun, almost at its zenith, beat down on us with the full fury of its orange fires.
"It's still your first day," Opportarius said, noting my progress. "Space junk impacts are more common than people would like to admit. We had a smaller piece hit in the west field a few weeks ago, but no one was around. What were you doing out here anyway?"
Something tickled at the edge of my consciousness like an almost forgotten dream. It was ship, and it was close by. Distracted, I struggled to come up with a coherent answer.
"You're a runner, aren't you?"
Opportarius accused me suspiciously.
"How did you get your ankle band off?"
Coming out from behind a small cloud, the sun glinted off an object poking out of the soil near Opportarius's foot. It caught both our eyes. Before I could move, he picked it up, looked at it quizzically, and was about to toss it in a pile of other metal bits when he saw my expression.
"This means something to you, doesn't it?"
He turned ship's container over in his paw, considering what to do with it.
"Is this some type of tool you use to help you escape your last bond owner?"
"No," I said, trying unsuccessfully to hide its significance.
"Something else, then?" "I think I'll keep it," Opportarius finally said, pocketing the container.
"Colrin has that," he pointed to my ankle bracelet, "to keep you in line. I've got the feeling this will do the same for me."
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Press Start to Join. Join hosts Josh and Alan as they discuss video games, movies, TV, comics, Star Wars, and more. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by Rumi. Cold drafts, flickering lights, and where's that leak coming from? If you've ever wondered what's really going on in your home, Rumi's Ask a Home Inspector service can help. Connect with a certified professional home inspector by phone or video call and get your questions answered. Rumi will let you know what's easily fixable with a little DIY or when you might need to call in some professional help. Visit rumi.ca. That's rumi.ca, and book your Ask a Home Inspector appointment today. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by Pod Power.
With PodPower, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. In this episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a PodPower shout-out to Book Women. Book Women is a podcast about editing, publishing, and writing Indigenous stories. Three Métis librarians representing nations from across the homeland aim to inspire Indigenous peoples to share their stories in whatever form that they enjoy. Guests include Indigenous storytellers from diverse mediums like podcasting, burlesque, books, comics, social media, films, music, and everything in between. You can listen and find out more at bookwomenpodcast.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.